Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode number 98 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented to you by Last Word on Sports. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all enjoyed the super wild card experimental weekend. Experimental? Is that a stretch? Probably is a stretch. I think it's going to be here to stay. Let me know what you thought of it. Comment section, if there is a comment section, wherever you're listening to, or on all social media outlets, at Nick Donatic. Name's in the description. I kind of liked it. You know, it's one of those things where more, I guess, to a certain extent, is always better, right? It was interesting to me, having only one bye. It does feel a little weird, obviously, for so long we're used to having two byes, and it's just one of those things. But when you think about it, it's not the end of the world for only the best team in a certain conference to have a bye. Kind of makes sense, I guess. Neither here nor there on it. More football is always fun. Six games, you're talking, you know, what, a 10-hour day? 1 to 4, the kickoffs rolling pretty much all into each other, except for the Tennessee and Baltimore one. Heavy running game from Baltimore, so, you know, game goes a little bit quicker. But for the most part, we saw all the games pretty much bleed into each other. Indy and Buffalo ended right as LA and Seattle was going to start. Tampa Bay and Washington starting right at the end of that, and then so on and so forth. Pretty entertaining weekend, I'm not going to lie to you. Hope you guys all enjoyed it. Personally, like I said, I did. Hope it's here to stay, I think it will be. So, let's start by jumping right into the Standout 7. So, obviously, did this last year. We do this every episode with the Standout 7 shtick, but last year, only 4 divisional games. So, it was a little bit easier, opens up a little bit more for us to talk about coaching hires. This week, we're just going to run through the games, and then number 7, we're going to do a little news and notes wrap-up, and then we'll get right into previews and pick 'em for the divisional round. So let's start right where they started last Saturday afternoon, the Indianapolis Colts against the Buffalo Bills. This was a weird game, a little bit, and part of it was the delay of game calls, because Indy and Phil Rivers was really taking it down to 1 second on the play clock quite a few times, hitting zero quite a few times, and then snapping it as quick as they could after. Whether that's hokey, I guess it really depends on your perspective. Myself, I don't, you know, doesn't make a difference to me who wins these games. I thought it was a little funky that they didn't have a single one of those called to delay a game. They talked about it, obviously, the official who works for the network talked about, well, you know, they have to look at the clock, and then when it hits zero, they have to turn their head and look at the ball. Like, you're not a giraffe or a giant mammal that has to turn that slowly. You can turn your head pretty quick. Do it right now. Do it just for fun. Look at the corner of your room or wherever you might be listening, and we thank you for listening, and look at the other corner. Look at how quick you did that. I know, it's fantastic. Look at how quick your head turns. Now consider your field of view. You know, consider if there were no walls there. You could probably see quite a decent distance just by doing that. Not to mention, and this is a question that I don't know the answer to, so I'll present it openly, and if you have an answer, let me know. Pre-snap, the official in charge of watching for the delay of game, is your whistle not in your mouth? I mean, I guess to avoid any accidents or such, but is your hand not on the flag? I'm a little confusion here, you know what I mean? And you could, there have been plays where they start the plenty of times. They start the play and then it's blown dead for delay of game. So it's not even a matter of that. It's, you know, I get it. Maybe, and I'm not trying to be that guy, but the referee's a little bit older dude. You know, maybe he's not turning his head as quick as I'm turning my head. Maybe he's letting it slide because, you know, it is what it is. Let's let him play. They do that in the playoffs, but you don't let them play with the play clock. You let them play with physical, you know, play styles. It's with play clock, really? And then the game-ending, and what should have been, fumble recovery after a brilliant play by the Buffalo Bills defense, where they let the Colts receiver go down, but he gave himself up, but he got back up. They let him get back up fully without downing him, and then strip him, recover the fumble, the game should be over. Buffalo's done it, phenomenal, their first win at home in the playoffs in over 20 years. And it was called down by contact? It was kind of bizarre to me that that was the call in that situation in a playoff game. Now, I'm not that guy that's going to say, oh, well, you know, home team gets the help, because the home team did not get the help in this one, in my opinion. On the delay games that really could have cost Indianapolis early in the game, and then on this game-sealing fumble, force fumble and recovery, it just wasn't there. Okay, all's well that ends well. Buffalo wins the game. At the end of the day, Indy played plenty well enough to win this game. You talk about going for it in the red zone on fourth and goal. That's what it comes down to, yeah? Realistically, we don't even have to go there because Rodrigo Blankenship missed an easy field goal. Kicked two kicks. His long on the day was 30. Like, it wasn't a hard kick that Blankenship missed. Just a little bit of doink. A little bit of doink. It's fun to get some doinks in there, but not if you're a Colts fan. So that's a tie game right there. You add in the going for it on fourth and goal. Rivers with a decent throw, and it's catchable in the left corner of the end zone, and it's just dropped. Dropped passes were the story of the day for me. Because Indianapolis, if I'm being completely honest, outplayed Buffalo, in my opinion. They played every bit as good as this Bills team, and then some. Granted, you want to talk about the delay game things that probably even it out? Yeah. The game-ending fumble that wasn't a fumble? Yeah. Leaving Rivers out there to throw the Hail Mary was intriguing too, but we won't really go into that. It might have been his last throw of his career. It was bizarre. Anyway, so drop passes really come back to cost them in this one. And then the intriguing thing, you know, like I said, the decision is whatever, going for it on fourth and goal. It comes down to the missed field goal. It's fun to play 20-20 hindsight with Frank Reich because he's that guy. We've had this conversation with him before. But you hit a field goal, you're tied. All of a sudden, at the end of the game, you're not making the same decisions. Everything's completely different. Either way, I do think it was a bit of a botch job late in the game on the final drive because they couldn't get any closer for the field goal. It was a 64-yard kick, and they had a couple of chances to try and get a little bit closer. No, it just wasn't there. That whether it be Phil's reads or the play calling is interesting to me, but Indy played a heck of a game. They did. They played their hearts out, and, you know, this Colts team, considering they lost Marlon Mack at the beginning of the year, Jonathan Taylor really developed. They have a strong core with guys like Taylor. Mack will be back. Naheem Hines is a solid change of pace back. That's a scary team. The receiving core with the always consistent T.Y. Hilton, who didn't have a great game, two catches for 32, but you know what you're going to get for the most part over the course of 16 games, or 17 if they extend the season, with T.Y. Hilton. Trey Burton, decent contributor at tight end. Mo Alie-Cox, decent contributor. Same with Jack Doyle, kind of a tight end by committee. Michael Pittman took some step forward. He looks like he's genuinely going to be a contributor on this offense moving forward. Same goes with Zach Pascal. You got to like what position you're in if you're the Indianapolis Colts. The question becomes, if you are the Colts, do you want Phillip Rivers back? Phillip Rivers, after the game, of course, said, I've never not believed it was the year. He thought this was the year he'd be able to win it. Unfortunately for him and for Colts fans, it wasn't. Rivers also said, if it is God's will that I'm in Indy with the Colts next year, then I'll be here. If not, I'll be on the sideline with a ball cap on my head coaching football. If you're the Indianapolis Colts, what are your options? Well, this is a CBS Sports graphic, by the way. Not all-encompassing, but we'll run through their options. Trade block, obviously, perhaps Sam Darnold. Interesting. Do you want to put a guy that needs some development into a team that is ready to win now? Carson Wentz, a guy who might be falling off a little bit. Do you want to try and help him re-find it? I think he can re-find it, but if he goes out and plays poorly for the Colts, you've lost, in all likelihood, draft capital, and you're stuck with him. Deshaun Watson. I don't think there's any situation on earth, and I don't know why CBS Sports would put this in the graphic, there's any situation on earth where the Houston Texans, a team that was bullied for over a decade by Peyton Manning, that they would put Deshaun Watson in a Colts uniform. I think that their fans dislike the Colts tremendously. I think that the team dislikes the Colts, as they should. They are division rivals. This is not the Eagles trading McNabb to the then Washington Redskins, now Washington football team. This is not that. McNabb was over the hill. Deshaun Watson is entering his prime. He could be a top five quarterback within the next few years, within the next year, potentially. With this core, with this good of an offensive line, he could be a top five quarterback. He could win an MVP in this offense easily. That trade will not happen. I don't know why they put that there. Free agency. Do you go after a guy like Cam Newton? I'll be honest, Cam Newton looks a little washed to me. There's not much around him there, perhaps with a better core like this, especially with the running backs they have. They emphasize the mobility of Cam, but at that point, if you're emphasizing mobility, why don't you just get somebody a little bit younger? You're talking about the mobility of an aging quarterback. Is that really something you want to lean on, a guy who's been hurt before? I don't think that's a fit. Trubisky. This one's also intriguing. CBS Sports listing it, of course, on the free agent market. Trubisky is odd, but perhaps emphasizing, like we said, the mobility, on top of the fact this core is great, he could be a decent fit for them. But I'm be honest, I might rather have Phil Rivers at this point. Obviously, Trubisky has the mobility edge, but I just trust Phil Rivers more. I don't trust Mitchell Trubisky nearly as much as I trust a veteran in Phillip Rivers. That's just the way it is. You know, Trubisky this year, 16 touchdowns to 8 picks, not bad. You take a look last year, 17 touchdowns to 10 picks, meh, you know, in 15 starts. The year prior, the best year of his career, 24 touchdowns to 12 picks. He's never thrown for more than 3,500 yards. He started 12 games, 14 games, 15 games, and this year, 9. Obviously hard to do that in 9 games, but the previous two seasons, 3,200 yards, 3,100 yards. Nothing insane, nothing jaw-dropping. The most intriguing of the free agent options listed here by CBS Sports via an Instagram post is Dak Prescott. Because I don't think there's any way Dallas lets him hit the open market. If, and this is a large if Dak Prescott hits the open market, the Indianapolis Colts should wholeheartedly be interested. And I'm take this as a New Yorker who watches a lot of NFC East football. Dak Prescott is a pretty darn good player. Dak Prescott at Mississippi State reminded me, in some of the games I watched him play, of a Cam Newton light. You know what I mean? It seemed like the athleticism wasn't there as much, but he seemed more calm. Not like Cam Newton's like running around like a bat out of hell, like a Lamar Jackson scramble on some of these plays, or even Patrick Mahomes. But the sense of, you know, you could take the deep breath and know, in all likelihood, Dak Prescott's not going to cost me this game. Once again, not that those guys will, but Dak Prescott, I can't explain it. It's one of those things where the game seems to be moving a little bit slower for him. Dak Prescott, of course, was pacing to have the best season of his career. Through 5 games, he had 9 touchdowns. That would put him around 30, but he gets hurt in the 5th game, so he probably could have pushed towards the mid-30s, even to 40, depending on how things would have gone. Take a look at his numbers. 23 touchdowns to 4 picks, 22 touchdowns, 13 picks, 22 touchdowns, 8 picks. Last year, almost 5,000 yards, a career high, easily. 30 touchdowns, 11 interceptions on an 8-8 team. He has a core around him, and that's the question you can ask yourself. He has some around him already. Would this team be more than he's used to playing with? I'd think so. I think especially with Frank Reich, it might help him. And we saw Mike McCarthy, 9 touchdowns and 4 picks through 4 games. It's a lot of picks through 4 games, but the 9 touchdowns is not bad. You know what I mean? That's trending for mid-30s. I think Dak Prescott would be far and away a good target for them. If Phil does decide to call it a career, which, if you read the tea leaves based on some of those quotes, I don't believe he will. If he were to decide to, you wonder if they'd be in the trade market. Some mock drafts, including The Athletic, have the Atlanta Falcons picking up a quarterback. Would the Atlanta Falcons be interested in taking a Landry Fields or a Zach Wilson and going for a start day one approach? If the Indianapolis Colts call and try to pick up a Matt Ryan, I think that would be an upgrade. Would the Detroit Lions be interested in moving on from Matthew Stafford? I think that would be an upgrade. I think Matthew Stafford on this Colts team would be a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Not that this team wasn't with Phillip Rivers, though I certainly made it seem that way throughout the season. And honestly, I didn't have them as a legitimate Super Bowl contender. I think a guy like Matthew Stafford, and you could say he hasn't shown it in the playoffs, well, obviously, but some of the other guys you'd be getting haven't either. Dak Prescott, Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz. So it's not like you're shopping at a store looking at Joe Montana's and Tom Brady's. I think that would be an interesting one. Talking about the NFL draft, they're picking late in the first round. Unless they're going to trade up, I don't really think there's anything there for them. I think they're in the market. They're a win-now team. They got to get a vet. If it's Phil, stick with Phil. It went well this year. If not, it's not the end of the world. There are plenty of veterans out there that can come into this team day one and be a favorite to win the division, especially if the Texans move on from Deshaun Watson, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Number two in the standout seven, let's talk about that Rams-Seahawks game. This one was intriguing to me for several reasons. Obviously, you know, you have the upset factor, you have the divisional factor, and blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is the Rams went into Seattle with a backup QB starting. He gets hurt very early in the game. And just, oh, by the way, they go out and dominate this game. You know, and they're up 20-10 at half. They're up, the game is not perfectly out of reach, but I would say I was confident watching this game that this game was going to go their way for almost the entirety of the second half, just based on the way the Seattle team was playing. It's intriguing to me. I mean, it came across, looking back on it, that Seattle's offense, I mean, obviously they've got some good deep shots built into that playbook, and we see them move on from Schottenheimer, and I think that's probably the right move. We see all the highlights, and we've seen in games work out, and they're a great team this year for, in parts, you know what I mean? I was real high on Russell Wilson. I pulled out on it at the end of the year on him being an MVP, personally. He fell out of the top two even after being number one on my list for quite some time. Not that Russell had a bad year, but they fell off at the end, so therefore so did he as well. They have a good deep shot game. And by that, I mean Metcalf up the sideline and little perfect lollipop throws. Not Lamar Jackson lollipops, but Russell has the perfect way to put just enough air under it where it's like Manning to Manningham on the sideline. Like he just drops it over the shoulder to a guy like Tyler Lockett. He drops it over the shoulder on occasion to a guy like a David Moore. But we saw in this one, they don't have nearly as good of an intermediate passing game or a short passing game. Not like every team's, you know, if you have a great quarterback, you're going to have a phenomenal passing game everywhere. Not every team is, I was going to say like a Green Bay Packers, you know what I mean? Even you could even argue New Orleans, though as Drew Brees has gotten older, it's definitely focused more on short to intermediate, but they still have some deep shots built in. Not every team has that guy at the helm that could do that. Not every team has a Sean Payton. Or even a Matt LaFleur. I wouldn't put him on Sean Payton's level, but you can make the argument, I guess, in terms of offensive prowess this season. The fact of the matter is they just don't have that. And we saw when they tried to go short, we saw a wide receiver miss a block or go low effort even on a block on a wide receiver screen. It gets picked off. It gets run all the way back. And the game was over from that point. It was over. We saw another point where Russ missed Metcalf on a huge deep shot that could have been a touchdown. He was under a lot of pressure. You know, could have been a different game, yeah, sure, but it is what it is. The fact of the matter is the team just didn't play good enough. They did not. And I'm not putting it all on Seattle's defense, because you take into account the pick six, they only let up 23. I know you got to count the seven, but they only let up 23. And take a look. Jared Goff did not play great. He goes 9 for 19. Whether that be because he's battling the injury or the Seattle pressure or any of those things, Cam Akers was the team. 28 carries for 131 yards and touchdown. The running game, they got beat up on the ground. Seattle got out-physicaled at home in a playoff game. And look, let's call it like we see it. If there was a crowd at this game, I think the outcome is quite different. Particularly when you consider that the backup quarterback was starting, the pressure on his shoulders would have been immense. On top of the fact that if he's hurt, you then have Goff coming in and the fans heckling him and things like that. Oh, you weren't good enough to start. You're not blah, blah, blah. I think it would have been a big, big, big difference. However, we do not operate in a universe or a world, I should say, where fans we're permitted to the point that we're used to, especially in Seattle, where that's their main advantage. That's really their their go-to, I should say. When they're at home, they're darn good because it's loud and you can't hear and you're rattled, especially if you're a guy like John Walford, and we wish him nothing but the best, obviously, as he was taken to the hospital with the stinger he suffered, or neck injury. I don't know. I think it's the right move for them to move on from a guy like Schottenheimer. There's reports that they're interviewing Anthony Lynn. I think that'd be a great hire. There's reports that they're going to interview Doug Peterson. I think that'd be an intriguing hire. I like Anthony Lynn a lot. I think it'll be a fast track for Anthony Lynn to get another head coaching job, so I'm all for it. Let me know what you think, Seattle fans, wherever you are, in the comment section or on social media, as we always do. You know the shtick. And Rams fans, congratulations. You guys got a one-way ticket to Green Bay. Number three in the standout seven. Let's talk about the next one. Tampa Bay, Washington football team. Or Washington name redacted. This guy Taylor Heinicke looks like a legitimate NFL quarterback. And we have some of these quotes from after the game. I deserve to be in this league a little longer. Taylor Heinicke. Terry McLaurin, I'll take number four on my team any day of the week, twice on Sunday. Hope we're teammates in the future. When your star receiver says, I hope we're teammates in the future about a quarterback that you're not going to have to pay a lot of money, you do it. It's that simple. And just one more step before we get into the breakdown. Last time a team under 500 played in the playoffs, it was a 7-win team coached by Ron Rivera that beat an 11-win team coached by Bruce Arians. The same exact situation takes place here, of course, both in different places. Of course, the win goes to Tommy Boy. Shout out to all the people that bet the over, bet over the spread on this one. That took Tampa Bay with the spread, because you probably didn't win. Taylor Heinicke found a way to make this game close. You take a look, he was their leading rusher at 46 yards. He throws for 306, a touchdown, and a pick in this one. Cam Sims played well. Terry McLaurin played well. Some catches from Logan Thomas. The fact of the matter is, the Washington pass rush, led by the confident Chase Young, just didn't do it enough. They get three sacks in this one, two for Daron Payne, one for Montez Sweat, and I'm looking up and down for Chase Young, and he's got one tackle, two assists. No sacks. Now, whether that be because they were talented enough to block him, or whether that be because they were smart enough to scheme around him, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, Tampa Bay was good enough to win this one, and they did. 22 of 40 from Thomas, some missed throws from Thomas in this one. 381 and two touchdowns. Pretty darn good. Completion percentage aside, pretty darn good. Leonard Fournette, 19 carries for 93, which was a big one. Leonard Fournette, they talked about Rojo not being able to go in this one for them. You wondered if it would play in. It did not play in at all. Huge game for Mike Evans. We see Antonio Brown get a touchdown. This team is clicking. Rob Gronkowski, no catches in this game. He didn't need any. This team was clicking. They really were. And, not the most impressive win for Tampa, if we're talking legitimately, because backup quarterback and you guys win by eight. But, you know, I think it's an interesting one to me, in that if Washington can play them close and they're still kind of hot, you know, 381 from Tom is a good game. Almost 100 yards on the ground from Leonard Fournette's a good game. Are we underrating this Washington team? Are we overrating the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Because they're walking into New Orleans. Granted, it's not like they're used to. You know, playoff game in New Orleans, it would have been loud. Would have been real loud. But, I don't know. I don't know. We'll talk about that when we get to the pick 'em portion of this week's episode. Let's talk about number four. And we're getting to the one I really want to touch on. You know what it is. It's that Cleveland game. Let's talk about how hard I called this shot. Baltimore Ravens heading to Tennessee. That's number four on the standout seven, of course. The fact of the matter is, I talked about going in how hard it is to keep up that momentum and to keep beating down a team like this. And at the end of the day, Derrick Henry had 51 total yards. I said Ryan Tannehill might not be good enough if they had to push it onto him, and he was not good enough. Look, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, although that's completely what I'm doing. But I will say this. Baltimore did not play fantastic either on offense. On defense, I thought they were probably as good as they've been all year, if we're being completely honest. Against the league's leading rusher, 51 total yards, including a couple of catches, that's fantastic. You take a look at the fact that on offense, they muster up 20 points against, look, Tennessee's a pretty decent defense, but I don't know. With the explosiveness and the creativity that they were able to put out there when Lamar was an MVP, you'd expect more out of this team. Perhaps Tennessee's just that team for them, and we'll see how it goes this week against Buffalo. But, like I said, the fact of the matter is, you have a huge run from Lamar. He's great. 136 yards on the ground. He's efficient in the passing game, 17 to 24. He throws one of the worst interceptions I have ever seen an MVP throw, if I'm being completely honest. Didn't matter, you know. I think the thing that hurts Tennessee here, and it's intriguing to me, that we see now the Atlanta Falcons hire Arthur Smith, former Titans offensive coordinator, as their head coach, is that they didn't have the creativity. And look, I get it. Baltimore's defense was hellacious. They played great. And it's a lot to ask for. You know, Derrick Henry is not, he's not Tyreek Hill. You can't put him everywhere. But the creativity to try and overcome what you knew what was coming. You knew they were going to stack the box. Oh, we're good enough. All right, well, that's overconfidence, a little bit of arrogance. You got to have something. And I'm not saying, I said this a lot if you were listening to the show back when Odell Beckham was a Giant, if you were, I thank you. If not, I'll fill you in. That the team didn't get enough creative ways to get the ball in his hands. Now, I'm not saying Derrick Henry is Tyreek Hill, like I mentioned. He's not even a Christian McCaffrey in terms of versatility. He's a downhill runner. You give him the ball and let him go straight. I get it. However, creativity stretches beyond that. Whether it be trying to mix in screens here and there, whether it be trying to supplement your running game with a short passing game, it didn't really seem it was there. Did I think Tannehill played terribly? No. 18 of 26 for a buck 65. His numbers are almost identical to Lamar Jackson. He throws for a touchdown and a pick. Lamar throws for no touchdowns, one pick, but of course he has the big rushing touchdown where he goes straight up the middle doing his thing. Explosive. Marquise Brown, one of his best games of the year. 7 catches for a buck 09. We saw in this one on the other end, A.J. Brown, 6 catches for 83, 1 touchdown. This was not really, it's not a mirror match, but you could make the argument. And if you don't know what a mirror match is, I'll explain it to you. I'm sure you do, but for those of you who might not. Mirror match, what I'm talking about, like, is a video game situation where you're playing as the same team. Or if it's a fighting game, you're playing as the same character. You have the same strengths, and you have pretty much the same weaknesses. Both of these teams want to pound the rock. That's their job on offense. And if it's not working, things are going to get iffy. And it got iffy for the Tennessee Titans, even though they were up 10-0 in this game. They outscored 20-3 in the last three quarters. You know, and we got to talk about it because here we are, and it's my job. You know, it is literally my job to talk about these things. You're down 4 points, fourth quarter, 4th and 2 at your opponent's 40 against Lamar Jackson. You punt the ball. I first gets this, but obviously we don't do the show live during the games, although that would be fun one day. My goodness, that was a horrible call. You want to talk about Frank Reich going for it, 4th and goal? Phillip Rivers threw a catchable pass to a wide receiver open in the back of the end zone. Ball was dropped. Punting the ball, but why? 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 It doesn't really make sense to me. It's sitting on your hands from a coach that has shown in the past that he's willing to do so much more than that. I don't get it, Vrabel. I know your offense didn't have it. I know Derrick Henry's getting stuffed. I get it. And we saw on the sideline, you're chatting with him. Perhaps he was a little frustrated. I get it. Not DK Metcalf frustrated, and we went without ripping him, trust me. He's been ripped enough, I'm sure. But really? You're just not even going to give it the effort. And that's puzzling to me because that's the game. You know, you're at your opponent's 40, you're up 7, and there you go, game over. Thanks for playing. You don't even need a nice ticket home. You're already at home. You lose a home playoff game, they stomp on your logo, they take the moral high ground about you stomping on their logo, which is bizarre to me, how you moral high ground and then do the same thing, whatever, and they don't shake hands after the game. It's great, it's a rivalry I don't care about, to be completely honest with you. We just talked about Metcalf in terms of creativity, or rather Schottenheimer in terms of creativity, trying to have more of a short passing, intermediate passing game, and how they might need to try to get a guy like DK Metcalf the ball more if they know he's going to be frustrated like that, not just the cheesy, oh, we'll throw him a screen and it gets picked off. You know, and I mentioned screens for Henry, but realistically what I mean is you can, when your running game's not working, you can't just fold. Oh, we're going to lose this one. I get it. It worked for the duration of the season, and it worked for most of last season, too. And you're limited by the skill set of your quarterback. But with a guy like Ryan Tannehill, he does have some mobility you could work in, on top of the fact that you have pretty good athletes at receiver and guys like A.J. Brown. You know, maybe get funky with it. See what you can do. I'm not telling you to go full Carolina Panthers, back with Cam Newton and go full college offense with some options and some weird spread stuff. But it wouldn't hurt, you know? I don't know. That's just me. Congratulations to the Ravens moving on. Congrats to me, because I called this one. Next, number five in the standout seven, we're going to move on to... was this the stinker of the weekend? Not really, but it kind of was. Chicago Bears taking on the New Orleans Saints in New Orleans. Drop touchdown by Wims really killed any shot of an upset in this game. Chicago's just not good enough, and we knew that going in. The thing is, reports surrounding this game, and even during the game, they wouldn't stop talking about it, that this is Drew Brees' last run. And if you remember, I believe we talked about this. Now, I could be wrong. I could be wrong, and we'll look back, you know, but I believe when we talked about Drew Brees returning in episode 94, I think... perhaps it was earlier. We talked about this, that this might be his final hurrah. And now the report coming out that he might be viewing it that way as well. And I can't blame him, I guess, with how weird of a season it's been with the no fans and chasing back to last offseason and blah, blah, blah. We don't need to go into it. Drew Brees looked pretty good. 28-39, 265, two touchdowns. Alvin Kamara looked good. Just a hair under 100 yards. Deontay Harris had one of the best games I've ever seen him play, which is intriguing because it shows you the power of just the presence of a star wideout on your offense. Michael Thomas goes 5 catches for 73 and a touchdown. That's a ho-hum day for Michael Thomas. But the fact that Deontay Harris isn't in a position where the defense is actively looking at him changes it completely. Not that this Bears defense is dynamic or world-shattering. Not that they're even as good as they were a few years ago when they were a higher seed. But when Michael Thomas was out, we saw and we talked about this New Orleans offense and how different it looked and how it really was kind of pressing, I assume, on a guy like Sean Payton where Mike Thomas isn't there. What are we going to do? All right, how much can we really realistically scheme to Jared Cook? How much can we really lean on Kamara? You know what I mean? And then the COVID scare for him and blah, blah, blah. But you look at their receiving core, and a lot of it hinges on Michael Thomas. Because you need to be looking at Michael Thomas so Jared Cook can go up the seam. Because you're focusing on Michael Thomas, Deontay Harris can have 7 catches for 73. You could sprinkle in targets for other guys. We saw Emmanuel Sanders had 2 catches in this game. He didn't do much at all. 2 catches for 3 yards. Emmanuel Sanders, you know, a handful of years back, and I think he's still a decent contributor, handful of years back was a solid number 2, right? In Denver. He was a solid number 2. You make the argument he was number 3, but he's a solid number 2 for my money. And at this point in his career, he is a role player. So when he was, you know, theoretically the best route runner on this offense or the best receiver they had on the field, that's not going to work. You know, that's New York Jets football, right? That's not even Jaguars because DJ Chark's a pretty darn good player. But that's low-tier offense football. There's nothing you could do about it. Michael Thomas back in there. This team is back to being a legitimate title contender, and I'm really looking forward to seeing them take on Tampa Bay for the third time. We talked about how hard it is to win 3 times. I think this team might be good enough. We'll talk about that in just a bit. And now let's talk about the Browns. We have to talk about the Browns. I want to talk about the Browns. Sound like Charlie Kelly talking about the mail. We see on the first play, and as soon, I'm not even kidding. I considered turning the game off after the first play. Because I've seen this movie before. This is Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl. The snap goes over the star quarterback's head, and the game is over. The game is over. Big Ben has Cam Newton disease. He won't dive on the ball. We see James Conner stumble, and they score a touchdown when the Browns, being they, score a touchdown on their first play on defense. How many parlays did they help out with that one? But my goodness. They go up 28-0 in the first quarter. Ben throws a pick on the next drive. We see a touchdown for Jarvis Landry. It's 21-0 with 5 minutes left. Ben throws a tipped pick with 3 minutes left, and it's 28-0. It's interesting. We see I was watching Good Morning Football, which I don't watch too often on the NFL Network. Free plug for the 10 people here that are listening, myself included. But they were really, you know, calling to rip into Ben for not diving on the ball, which is intriguing to me. Because we saw it with Cam Newton in the Super Bowl, right? And they ripped him relentlessly. And I will rip Ben, because I think he should have dove on the ball. However, I do think context matters. Cam Newton, in a Super Bowl, it was not early in the football game, to my memory. I could be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong, as usual. You know the deal. And then, you know, he gets ripped, and of course he does. This is Big Ben, aging quarterback. Not to mention Big Ben has a teammate in James Conner who's right next to him, who was trying to get the ball and stumbles. No ripping of James Conner. He just didn't get the ball. How did you not get the ball? Kick it out of the end zone. I get it. I've heard it all before. He deserves his ripping, but I wouldn't put this on the level of the Cam Newton thing, because Cam Newton was in the Super Bowl. This was the first play of the game. This is Peyton Manning not diving on the ball in the Seahawks Super Bowl. He didn't have to. His teammate dove on it. Safety and yada, yada, yada. But it's big. It is big. And we'll have the conversation. Additionally from that one, now we know why Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell left. They were right. That's a reach. Le'Veon Bell was not good with the New York Jets. He wanted his money, his money, his money. He got his money, and his career stock has tanked. You take a look as we go to a Pro Football Reference, a phenomenal website that we use for pretty much all of our statistical purposes on here. In his career, Le'Veon Bell has 6,400 rushing yards. Okay. And in terms of receiving yards, he has 3,300. His last year in Pittsburgh was 2017. In his first 5 years, he had 860 rushing yards, 1,361, 556 in an injury-shortened season, 1,268, and 1,291. Pretty darn good. He's arcing. Hall of Fame career arc. Through five seasons, he's 25 years old. At that point, he has 5,000 of those yards already. At the least. You know, actually, he's got, over 5,000 of those yards. Not to mention the receiving yards in those seasons. Three of them, he's over 600. One of them, he's over 850 receiving yards, giving him 2,000 yards from scrimmage and 11 touchdowns in 2014. In his second season. Le'Veon Bell has completely tanked his career. He got his check. 2019, after missing an entire season of paychecks, 2019, 800 rushing yards, 461 receiving, played in 15 games. His 789. His lowest rushing yard total since the season he only played 6 games. Lower than his rookie year. Okay. His lowest receiving yard total since that season as well. 2020, plays 2 games for the New York Jets, 9 games with Kansas City, mostly splitting time. Started 2 games. This year he had 328 yards. Where's the prime? He's 28 years old. Look, that's not an old man. I get it. There's at least some tread left on those tires, especially after a year off and a year with the Jets, where he only carried the ball 245 times. Not getting 400 carries here. But the fact of the matter is, Le'Veon Bell, talking about him as an example, he hurt his own career just for the sake of the money. Le'Veon Bell could have been a Hall of Fame running back. He got his money. He got paid. We split the hairs. He got an extra couple of million. We did it. Okay, and look, oh, he's winning now. He's on Kansas City. Yeah, he's on Kansas City because their lead back opted out because of the quarantine and the COVID. And then the backup running back, who right now looks better than him as a rookie, got hurt. That's the reason he's the lead back on a playoff team. That's it. That is the sole reason. Oh, well, look at Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown also, we'll be gentle with this one, because we don't know what's going on between the ears sometimes for Antonio Brown. It's a little rude, but that's the way a lot of people approach it. Antonio Brown left Pittsburgh. His final year in Pittsburgh, he's 30 years old, 1,297 yards, 15 touchdowns. He played one game last year. This year he winds up with 45 catches because they stat pad him at the end a little bit. 480 yards, 4 touchdowns. You're looking at peak Antonio Brown. We'll talk about, and we'll start it in 2011 if you want, because that was 1,100 yard receiving year, right? But we realistically, we could start at 2013 through 2018, right? A six-season stretch where he goes off for 1499, 1698, 1834, 1284, 1533, and, you know, ends off at 1297. Touchdowns, he goes for 8, 13, 10, 12, 9, 15. Targets, every season over 150 targets. It's 62 this year. It's easy. It's easy after the Pittsburgh Steelers show up small in a playoff game. It's very easy to rip them. I get it, and they deserve it. They played horrible. They went down 28-0. Almost found a way to come back, and I guarantee you quite a few of you out there thought there might have been a chance. Might have been a chance. When we get late in this game, you're thinking about it. Is something you're confident in? No. But we're sitting at 35-23. You're like, with a quarter to play, I don't know. Is Cleveland going to find a way? No, they didn't find a way. Kudos to Cleveland. Kudos to Jarvis Landry. Had a good game. Nick Chubb had a good game. Kareem Hunt pitched in a couple touchdowns, 50 yards on the ground. Baker Mayfield played a solid game. Played safe. That's all I really had to do. It's easy to rip Pittsburgh after this one. It's easy to rip Mike Tomlin, who for years, people have talked about Mike Tomlin. Right, Mike Tomlin, one of the best coaches in football, and I agree. I like Mike Tomlin. However, when was the last time the Steelers even went to the Super Bowl? A decade. A stack of 10 years. Look, I'm not saying they've been bad. In those 10 years, they had a 12-4, 11-5, 10-6, 11-5, 13-3, 12-4. AFC champions in 2010. Super Bowl champions in 08. Really? Interesting. Interesting to me. No? It just is. Because you take a look at the fact that, you know, they're coming out of the Bill Cowher era, right? And they don't like to hire a lot of coaches in Pittsburgh. It's not really a thing they do. You know, it's the way they run their franchise. Bill Cowher, they win the Super Bowl in 2005 at 11-5. 2006, they go 8-8, and he's out. So how many of these guys, by the time when they were the 2008 Pittsburgh Steelers, were already entrenched? And I'm not taking away from Mike Tomlin. I like Mike Tomlin, like I said. Ben Roethlisberger throws 17 touchdowns in that regular season. You know, a guy like Willie Parker. Okay. Well, Willie Parker was on that team that won the Super Bowl. He was still around. Okay. You know, Willie Parker, big explosive plays for them. Yeah. All right. Let's take a look. Let's keep going through. Obviously, Jerome Bettis retired. You know, we know that. Take a look. Let's keep going through. Hines Ward, still around. Santonio Holmes, 24 years old. You know, new addition. Okay, cool. Cool. Take a look. Heath Miller, still around. I'm not trying to make the point that trying to knock down all that Mike Tomlin has done, but I think we might need to realize this Pittsburgh team hasn't been the Super Bowl threat in a decade. Take a look on that defensive side. James Farrier, still around. Ryan Clark at 29. Polamalu, still in his prime. Lamar Woodley, young, obviously. Ike Taylor was around for the first one. Aaron Smith on the D-line. Larry Foote was around. This was a team that was a few years removed, and that's something that helped Mike Tomlin in terms of job security. And then they go, obviously, in 2010. They lose the Super Bowl to the Packers, and that's a team that looks a little bit more different. A team that looks a little bit more like we're thinking. In that regular season, 12 games for Ben, 17 touchdowns. That's a Rashard Mendenhall team when he wasn't fumbling the ball. That's a team that, you know, we look at the receiving core. Mike Wallace, okay, younger guy. Hines Ward, Heath Miller. This team has transitioned from a defensive-led team to a team that really revolves around Big Ben. And it's interesting when you think about this in comparison to a team like the Seahawks. Because remember, when this team was, with this team being the Seahawks, when they were anchored by a phenomenal defense, perennial Super Bowl threat. Perennial. The team was fantastic. They go to two. They should have won two. And then they slowly, the pieces start to go away. Cam Chancellor goes away. Earl Thomas leaves. Richard Sherman leaves. And then you start to look at it as, okay, well, now we have Russell. So we're Russell's team. Are we going to be looking at, you know, we take a look as we dig back through the years. Are we going to be looking at, in a few years, a team in Seattle that looks a lot like this team in Pittsburgh? Well, it's been 7 years since, sorry, 6 years since Seattle was in the Super Bowl. 6 years, yeah. They lose the Super Bowl. They lose Marshawn Lynch. Thomas Rawls is their lead back. We take a look. They shift to more of a passing attack. Doug Baldwin, who eventually leaves. Tyler Lockett, and now they're with Metcalf. This team is completely different. Completely. Take a look at their ranks in points allowed and points scored. The year they win the Super Bowl, first points allowed. The next year, first points allowed, they lose the Super Bowl. Next year, they lose the divisional round, first. Next year, third. They miss the playoffs at 9-7 in 2017. 13th in points allowed. Next year, 11th, 22nd, 15th. Their offense, theoretically, has gotten better. Started to have to carry the team a little bit more. And obviously we're going on a super tangent here. But I wonder in a few years if we're not going to be looking at the Seattle Seahawks wondering, what happened to Russell? Well, I don't know. Maybe that's just not the way you should do it. Granted, you know, Seattle didn't have a choice, and same with Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, a lot of guys got old and they just moved on. We expected a lot out of this Pittsburgh team. We, not including me. Because I said from the outset, this was the worst 11-0 team I'd ever seen. If I had the guts, I would have picked Cleveland to win this game. The only reason I didn't is because Cleveland almost lost to Pittsburgh's backups. And they almost found a way to give up a comeback in this one, to be completely honest. I will rip the effort. I will rip Ben for throwing four interceptions. Granted, two of them were tipped. I will rip Pittsburgh's defense for not really putting up much of a fight. 48 points? My goodness. Granted, they were dealt some bad cards, but still, I will not rip the play calling, throwing 68 passes, because you're down 28-0 in the first quarter. I will not rip the effort from certain guys like Juju and Deonte Johnson. I won't even rip the effort from Ben after the dive on fumble, because as people said, Ben didn't look like he didn't want to be there. You're down 28-0, you just got punched in the mouth. You're kind of shell-shocked, I imagine. After the game, we see Ben talking to Marquise Pouncey, very emotional, saying, you know, I feel bad. I'm sorry I couldn't win it for you, brother. And, it, you know, it's one of those things. It's like you realize how long these guys have been around. Willie wind up hanging it up? I don't know. We talked about this a few years ago, and he's still here. I think he'll still be here next year. But we'll talk about it in the upcoming episodes, I assume. After the game, we'll talk about this as we push onward. Chase Claypool says, bad loss, but the Browns are going to get clapped next week. And then we see also Juju Smith-Schuster talking about, you know, before the game, oh, the Browns is the Browns. Guys, like, and look, I get it. This reminds me of the New York Giants with the boat trip, the infamous boat trip with Odell Beckham. The veterans were there, so it let the kids do it. Juju Smith-Schuster, for all intents and purposes, is the veteran in that wide receiver room. If he's dancing on logos and doing whatever the hell he wants, you could bet your bottom dollar Chase Claypool is going to do it too. Deonte Johnson will do it if he wants to. You never know. Maybe it'll bring that out of a guy like Eric Ebron, who hasn't done something like that per se, but if that's the culture of that wide receiver room, then sure, why not? Do what you want. intriguing, to say the least. Number 7 in the standout 7, a little bit of a wrap-up as we push onward. We're at the 50-minute mark already. We're going to get into the picks quickly in a little bit here. You know we couldn't go the whole episode without doing this, though. Number 7 in the standout 7, let's start with Doug Peterson. Ha 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 ha. Gotcha. Doug Peterson. Hilarious to me. He's out in Philly. Pushed out. Supposedly he said he's sick of people telling him what to do. Like, you have a boss. What the hell are you talking about? Everyone has a boss. The owner doesn't have a boss. But you don't want people to tell you what to do? Okay, go buy a team. What do you want me to tell you? Like, you can get a job at McDonald's and people can tell you what to do. Go be an entrepreneur then, and then the IRS will tell you how to do things. Like, somebody's always going to have to tell you what to do. I don't know what you're talking about. Intriguing to me. Good luck to Doug moving onward. And, you know, it's funny because you can make the argument he did what was best for the organization moving forward by taking that loss. However, it seems to me like some people in the organization were not too happy with that. They're not happy with the bad reputation they just received for clearly tanking the game against the Washington football team in Week 17 and deciding the NFC East by that way. But by the way, they could have left Hurts out there and still lost. It's possible. It's not like he's Joe Montana. Second Joe Montana reference this episode. However, they didn't do that. Not to mention, perhaps they wanted to see what they had in Hurts. Perhaps Jeffrey Loria was intrigued, and he's like, you know, okay. Or Jeffrey Loria, I should say. Perhaps he was like, all right, well, let's leave him out there. See if we can win a big divisional game. Okay, if not, let's go to Wentz. Says, nope, didn't work. He's getting an interview for the Seattle job like we talked about. Good luck. He got an interview for the Jets job. Jets go with Robert Saleh. I think that's a great hire for the New York football Jets. I like it because he's an energetic dude. He seems like to be the guy that could get people to buy in pretty easily. Will that help them? I don't know. Moving forward, we'll discuss it in the future episodes. Had to touch on it, though. Chuck Pagano out as the Chicago Bears DC. Didn't think their defense was that atrocious, but I guess, you know, it's time to move on. We talked about Schottenheimer. Urban Meyer in Jacksonville, which is big. It's interesting to me. I don't know. People talked about his culture and the things he let happen at Florida and the things he let happen at Ohio State. We'll see how that translates onto a professional level. Obviously, they're making a decision at quarterback. Like he said, they're probably going to go with Lawrence, but it would be intriguing if maybe they weren't so in love with Lawrence as everyone else thought. Pittsburgh, let's go. Their offensive coordinator and two other assistants. I guess. Okay. It's news, so we had to mention it. Congrats to Alabama for winning the national championship, beating the bricks off of Ohio State. And we'll end on two things. One more. Actually, a couple more. I lied. Three more. Two we'll talk about and one we'll pass by. Dan Quinn, hired as a Dallas defensive coordinator. Is it a good move? We'll find out. It's been a little while since he's been in DC, so maybe it'll help them out. One, we talked about this before. Miami player is not, quote-unquote, not confident in Tua as their 21 starter. Hilarious to me. Quite hilarious. I wouldn't be super-duper confident, but you drafted the guy high. You got to start him. You can't bring back Fitzmagic and have him be the relief pitcher. That's not how it works. He's got to, you know, he's got to fly. If he flies too close to the sun and his wings burn up, that's life. And you move on. You have a Josh Rosen situation. It happens. You might have a Sam Darnold situation. It happens. Tua looked pretty good in college. He didn't look pretty good very much at all this year. We'll see. Could be the injury thing. Could be the lack of training camp. Whatever. We'll see how it goes for them next year. I found it very intriguing, though. Additionally, let's talk about the Houston Texans. We talked about it last week. We'll talk about it just a smidge here. We'll put like a 90-second clock on it if possible. Andre Johnson talks about the Houston Texans wasting people's careers, and DeAndre Hopkins chimes in, and Deshaun Watson says he was at a 2, but he took it to a 10. First of all right, Drake. Second of all, like, you don't have to take the contract. You do not have to sign extensions. You guys know that, right? Look, I get it. I've never been offered that amount of money in my life, and I never will be. And if you're listening to this, you probably won't be either. I'm sorry. I hate to break it to you. The majority of people in your family will never get that, ever. You will never get offered that amount of financial security. But the fact of the matter is, you have to know your worth. Look, if you're going to go through each other, I don't want to get franchise tag. Play on the tag. And you can get out of there. Andre Johnson, like, are you kidding? Andre, like, these teams were not good that you played on. And you knew they weren't good, and you stuck around. Did you expect them to be good? Like, come on, Andre. Like, it's an expansion team. Come on now. Really? Before they drafted you, where they were 4-12, was the first season in their franchise's history. Then they go 5-11, then they go 7-9, 2-14. Like, come on, dude. What'd you expect? Andre Johnson was a great receiver. Great wide receiver. One of my favorite wide receivers when he was playing. He played there for 12 years. How many contracts did you sign with them, Andre? You could have left. Nobody wants Andre Johnson. When you finally leave, you leave at 34 years old to go to a division rival. Like, what? 2015, you play for the Colts. Team goes 8-8. How is that any different? How is that any different at all? Like, I don't get it. I don't. That team didn't go to the playoffs. Really? Like, what? That was so weird to me. Not to mention the year you leave, the Texans go 9-7, and they win the division. Like, what? Really? Really? Okay, whatever, Andre. And with Deshaun Watson, we've talked about it before. We've talked about the things ad nauseum, right? Forcing your way out, doing it the NBA way kind of thing, blah, 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 blah. I get it. You don't want to be there, you don't want to be there. You signed the contract. You're beholden to them. You want to do the Carson Palmer and don't play? Okay, cool, don't play. That's life. But, like, they are not obligated to trade you at all. You're angry at something your boss did. Okay, welcome to the world. That's how life works. Sometimes your boss will do things they are not beholden to you. They can make you a promise and break it. That's human. Have you ever been lied to before? Welcome. Sorry, Deshaun, you're a real talented player. I like you as a player. I liked you coming out of college. But I don't get it. I don't. You know, good players play on bad teams sometimes. That's the way it is. In every sport. Mike Trout, best player in baseball. His teams have been bad last couple of years. They have been. This is not basketball where one guy can... Even Kobe Bryant missed the playoffs during his career. You know what I mean? You're not in a situation where you can single-handedly make the team. Good quarterbacks have played on bad teams. It's just the way it is. I think Justin Herbert played great this year. He didn't play as well as you, but he played great. His team didn't make the playoffs. You didn't make the playoffs. You played great this year. That's life. The culture. The culture's that bad in Houston. Andre Johnson was there in 2003. So what, is the owner? Is that the end game here? I've heard that floated now and again, that the owner's politics could somehow play into this. How much interaction do you have on a daily basis with the owner of your team? I don't know the answer to this. Depends on the franchise. I mean, is he George Steinbrenner walking through the dugout? Is he walking through the locker room telling you to change your song on the whatever you're playing your music on? Like, what are we doing here? Didn't influence you enough to not take the money. Just saying. It's hard to be endearing in a situation like that. Especially to the people in Houston. Look at J.J. Watt. Oh, they've wasted Watt's career. The team was decent. You don't always win the Super Bowl. So, I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. It's just the way it is, you know? You take a look. The years they've had Deshaun Watson. I mean, with Watson as their leading passer, they go 4-12. All right, bad team. Then they go 11-5, 10-6. They make the playoffs. 2 out of his 4 years. They've been in the playoffs. What do you want me to tell you? You know, it's just the way it is. His worst statistical season in terms of turnovers was last year. He had 12 interceptions. They made the playoffs. They were 10-5. He was 10-5 as a starter, I should say. Obviously, they weren't 10-5. They ended the season 10-6. They lose the divisional round. Okay. They lose the divisional round with a huge lead. They score 21 points unanswered in the first quarter and lose the game by 20. You ran into a buzzsaw. How is that the organization's fault? You threw for 388 and lost. All right, the other guy threw for 5 touchdowns. What do you want me to tell you? I can't do anything about that. You know, what do you want me to do for you? That's just the way it is, bud. Neither here nor there. That brings us to the end. That was longer than 90 seconds, obviously. That brings us to the end of the standout seven. We'll get into the pick'em portion of this week's episode. But first, we got to fix our playoff bracket. I saw a graphic. I will not name the website because their graphic was incorrect. I saw a graphic and I picked my bracket completely wrong because the rounds were wrong. But we'll pick them based on this week. So we'll start with the games this week and then we'll move on to it. And we'll do that however we're going to do that. So first and foremost, let's start with the first game of the day. 4:35 kick today from Lambeau Field. The LA Rams take on the Green Bay Packers. Now, in this one, let's look at the injury report. The Packers, listing one, doubtful, DN Kingsley Kiki. The Rams, going to be without quarterback John Walford and linebacker Terrell Lewis. Questionable, guard David Edwards and wide receiver Cooper Kupp with knee bursitis. From what I've heard, Jared Goff going to be a full go in this one. He's going to be completely fine. They said he was good all week during practice. A quick recovery for a quarterback from a broken thumb, but either way, they're going to be playing in the elements at Lambeau. Green Bay, throughout the year, you can make the argument was the best team in football. Genuinely. I'm going to take Green Bay to win this one at home just because I agree with that take. I think this Green Bay team is as good a team that we've seen all year in the NFL. And while I like the idea of a defense-first Rams team making a go for it, you know what I mean, with Aaron Donald, though he's battling an injury, obviously he's going to go. Torn rib cartilage, like a madman. The defense played great against Russell. I think the defense will play pretty well again today. We've seen the Packers throughout this season have some weird games. And when I say weird games, I'm thinking of a handful of them as we go through. Back to week one, we're talking about, you know, a little bit of a shootout in terms of scoring with the Vikings. We go through and we start to think and we say, you guys got blown out by the Bucs. And that's the big stinker that sticks out, obviously. Rodgers goes 16-35 with two picks. Brady goes 17-27, but the big yards come on the ground. 113 on the ground for Ronald Jones. So you're starting to think, a team leaning on a guy like Cam Akers, could they put up similar fight? And it's possible. We take a look at some of the other ones that play a close game with the Jaguars. They lose to the Minnesota Vikings, a team that obviously misses the playoffs. And, you know, they lose this one in large part to Dalvin Cook. 163 yards on the ground, three touchdowns. We take a look, they lost the game to the Colts in that game. 90 yards on the ground from Jonathan Taylor, nothing insane. 288 through the air for Phil Rivers. I don't know. The team's been good all year. I think they're still probably the best team in the NFC. And for that reason, I'm going to take them over the upset path for the Rams, who are actually, breaking as we're doing the show, going to be without Cooper Kupp today, which is huge. We talked about ad nauseum throughout the season how the Rams don't have that true blue number one guy to go to on their offense. They don't have a Mike Thomas. They don't have a Devontae Adams, a Tyreek Hill, a Dalvin Cook. No, but they had a cast of characters. They had Cooper Kupp. They had Robert Woods, Josh Reynolds, Higby, Cam Akers now out of the backfield. I don't think it's going to be enough, especially without Kupp. Give me the Packers to win this one at home and advance to host the NFC Championship game. Next at 8:15 today, the Baltimore Ravens continue their playoff run as they head to Buffalo to take on the Bills. The Ravens going to be without guard DJ, excuse me, the Ravens listing two is questionable, not out. Cornerback Marcus Peters, which is a huge one with a back injury, and guard DJ Fluker with a knee. Questionable for the Bills, DN Darryl Johnson. Now the intriguing part to me is Marcus Peters. If Peters doesn't go, it kind of changes my perspective on this one, because I think with Peters and Humphrey in the secondary, along with some of the players they have in that front seven, the Ravens could cause a bit of an issue for this Bills team. You take a look at what the Bills did last week against Indy. Josh Allen show. Runs for 50 yards, throws for 324, Stephon Diggs for a 128, Gabriel Davis pitches in, Cole Beasley pitches in, though he's fighting through injuries to play. This Bills team is good, and I've been high on them all year. However, I think they might have hit a bad matchup. And that's playoffs for you, right? The Ravens coming off a week where they run for over 200 yards, right? 136 for Lamar, 43 for Dobbins, 38 for Gus Bus, 19 on some little trickeration for Marquise Brown. We take a look at the amount of rushing yards that the Bills gave up. It's nothing crazy in terms of one guy, but 78 for Taylor, 75 with a big one for Hines, sprinkling some other ones. They didn't look fantastic against the run. Now you add in the fact that they're going to have to account for a quarterback that can run, whether it be by design or via scramble. As much as I want to pick the Bills in this one, I'm taking the Ravens to win this one on the road and continue that revenge path that we talked about last week. Next, tomorrow at 3:05 p.m., we have the Cleveland Browns heading to Kansas City to take on the Kansas City Chiefs. Intriguing part of this one is that we saw Odell Beckham saying the Browns are going to win. You're not even on the field. I'm sure Browns fans are sick of this guy. It's like Giants fans were. But a good, I like the confidence in your teammates, I guess. And we see Patrick Mahomes sees that and likes that. Okay, a little cheeky. A little cheeky with it. The interesting part to me as we get to the injuries, Chiefs obviously without linebacker Willie Gay, wide receiver Sammy Watkins, questionable, running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire, which would be a big addition for them, corner Rashad Fenton, and tight end Deion Yelder. Browns, none listed as out, however, a couple listed as questionable. Two tight ends, Steven Carlson with a groin and David Njoku with a hamstring. Tackle Jack Conklin, which is a big piece on that offensive line, and linebacker, former Giant, B.J. Goodson with a shoulder. Cleveland's going to have to play some ball control to win this one. If Clyde Edwards-Helaire comes back, that kind of impacts the way I'm going to pick this. However, I'm still leaning towards the defending champs. I think the defending champs have too much firepower. However, the Browns' ability to run two running backs out there, especially with Kareem Hunt supposedly calling this a revenge game. Look, I'm going to be blunt. We don't usually delve into too much off-the-field stuff. This is not a revenge game in the slightest. The team cut bait on you, whichever you prefer, because of an incident you had, like, assaulting a woman in a movie theater. This is not a revenge game in that, like, this is not Kirk Cousins going back to play Washington where they called him Kurt and they wouldn't pay him. This is not a revenge game like that. There's nothing like this going on. No. That being said, if he's treating it as such, you know, the Michael Jordan, I took it personal, you know what I mean, that kind of thing, he could be playing motivated. I think Chubb is a better back right now, but Kareem Hunt, we saw in Kansas City, he was a great running back for them, though they haven't missed a beat with him gone, I should say. Either way, give me Kansas City to win this one, though I see the window. There is a window in there for Cleveland. If they play ball control well enough, maybe force a turnover or two, they could find a way in this one. Though I don't think they will. Our final game of the weekend is a battle between two Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Tampa Bay heads down to New Orleans at 6:40 tomorrow to take on the New Orleans Saints. The Buccaneers are going to be without D lineman Jeremiah Ledbetter with a calf. Questionable a handful. Rojo with a quad and a finger. Two safeties, Jordan Whitehead with a knee and Anthony Adams. Saints going to be without corner Patrick Robinson with a hamstring. Questionable a handful on the offensive side. Will Clapp on the O-line, quarterback Taysom Hill with a knee, and running back Latavius Murray with a quad. Now, the intriguing thing in this one, we've discussed it before, is how hard it is to beat a team three times. And as much as I think this Saints team, we talked about, they're going up, and if Deontay Harris is going to play well, he could be a secret piece for them in this offensive run. They played well against Chicago. I talked about how, you know, which Tampa Bay are we seeing? I think they're still a very streaky team. I think without a crowd to impact this game, that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have the edge. You know, I like this New Orleans team. I've liked them all year, and now they're getting towards full strength finally. But Tampa Bay, I talked about it at the beginning of the season. I thought they were going to find a way to start clicking the longer the season went on, and it seems like they might be getting there. Will they get there before their season's over? I don't know. They could go out and lay out a stinker and lose by two scores tomorrow, and it wouldn't shock me. But I am taking the Buccaneers to win on the road. Two upset picks this week. Chalk on the high seeds, and then upsets for the non-one seeds. So, we mentioned last week, or I mentioned about last week, that we've messed up our playoff bracket. However, we take a look, we wound up picking pretty much the same teams. Last week, in my messed up bracket, we took Chiefs, Ravens, Packers, Bucks. This week, we took Packers, Ravens, Chiefs, Bucks. I'm going to hold with my pick for the Super Bowl, Chiefs over the Packers. I have them both winning. I have the Packers beating Tommy Boy. I think that the snow might come into play, depending on how the weather shakes out, though. I mentioned before, beginning of the year Super Bowl pick, as we scroll back, that I believe that was episode 80, as we look through our notes here. Yeah, we had the Chiefs over the Bucks, and I'm very tempted to default back to that. I had the Packers taking them down. I could easily see it being Chiefs-Bucks, with the Chiefs coming out on top, but I'll take Chiefs-Packers. Just tying up loose ends from last week's episode. That'll bring us to the end of the pick'em portion of this week's episode, and the end of episode number 98 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. I'm your host, Nicholas Denotic. The intriguing thing, we're getting close to episode 100. Should we do anything special? Let me know what you guys think. I don't really have too much planned. That'll, of course, be taking place not on championship weekend, but it'll be taking place Pro Bowl weekend. Maybe we could do our best ofs, do a little highlight mix, maybe get in there and start thinking about some of the things that we were really right on, some of the things we were really wrong on. Either way, who'd have thought we'd make it to 100 episodes? We're right knocking on the door, just like these teams in the playoffs, ready for greatness. Anyway, hope you all enjoy the games. And as usual, I've been your host, Nicholas Denotic, signing off.